Often we think of love as something mushy or something that isn't very strong, but that is actually not true. It's like when we come from pure love, when we come from unconditional love, and we don't have an agenda behind it, it is really strong. And it can build those bridges that otherwise we don't know how to build. Love gave us great clarity. You know, and we can hold a person with love and still stand very clear in our purpose and in the well-being of all. You know, just last week, I listened to an interview between Krista Tippett and Senator John Lewis. And Krista asked him about the marches from Selma to Montgomery. And as many of you know, it's like the first march, you know, they didn't get to complete it. Actually, they didn't get very far because they were brutally beaten back. And John Lewis was beaten to an extent that he was unconscious, and he thought he was going to die. The phenomenal thing about the event was that the people who marched didn't fight back because they had prescribed to nonviolence. And Krista asked him, it's like, how is that possible when you meet with so much violence? How is it possible to not fight back? And the first thing John Lewis said was, you know, you have to realize that we practiced. We practiced as a community. We didn't just decide one day, it's like, oh, we're going to go out and march and be nonviolent and that's it. He said, we got together and we would shove each other and we would pretend to spit at each other and we throw slurs at each other and we had to practice to stay nonviolent and not just till we were ready where we're going to march. We had to be ready first. And then Krista asked, she said, it's like, yeah, you know, but you didn't stop there. It didn't stop with that march because as we know, it's like John Lewis has done so much in his life and has met so much opposition. She said, how did you do that? Because you were not bitter. And John Lewis says, it's like, you know, we were trained, we were taught that the spark of God lives in each and every person. And I cannot attack the spark of God. I have to honor it and respect it and treat it with dignity. And he said, you know, I always have a choice. I either can be in fear or I can be in love. The Course in Miracles teaches that too, right? There's either fear or love. And he said, I made a commitment to always be in love. That is how he was able to do it. And good morning. I'm so glad to be here with you. And good morning to everybody online, our expanded community. Today is day 17 of the season for nonviolence. Who is familiar with the season for nonviolence? Some of you are. So let me give you some context. The Season for Nonviolence was co-founded in 1998, so it has been in existence for about 27 years. And it was co-founded by the grandchildren of Mahatma Gandhi, Arun and Sunanda Gandhi, and an organization called AGNT, which stands for Association for Global New Thought. And Unity Church is a part of AGNT. So the purpose of Season for Nonviolence is to promote nonviolence as a way to heal and transform communities. To promote nonviolence as a way to heal and transform communities. The season is 64 days. It starts on January 30th, which is the anniversary of the death of Mahatma Gandhi. And it ends on April 4th, which is the anniversary of the death of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. The labor activist Cesar Chavez is also acknowledged during that time. His birthday is on March 31st. All these three leaders stood for nonviolence. Stood for nonviolence and love and making sure that everybody, that the divine spark in every single person was honored and respected in this world. Through fighting systems to promoting well-care for everyone. You know, Unity's mission is to promote an harmonious world where people can experience peace. And Charles Fillmore says the following about this. He says, it is the law of spirit. It is the law of spirit that we must be that which we would draw to us. If we would draw to us love, we must be love, be loving and kind. If we would have peace and harmony in our environment, we must establish it within ourselves. It is the law of spirit that we must be that which we would draw to us. If we would draw to us love, we must be love, be loving and kind. If we would have peace and harmony in our environment, we must establish it within ourselves. In a way, I don't know how your brain works, but this is how my brain works. In a way, it's exciting, right? I go like, wow, 64 days, practice for nonviolence, promoting it, it makes a lot of sense, you know, because, you know, violence begets violence. So I am going to do this. I'm going to commit to this. I am going to be loved. And then I'm on the freeway. And it's a four-lane freeway, and so there are two lanes on my sides, and I'm behind a car, and then, you know, I don't know if you've ever had that, then in the left lane, which is supposed to be the fast lane. I'm from Holland. We really acknowledge the fast lane. And so it's like, you know, the car in the fast lane kind of hovers like the same place. And so I can't go around it. And I go like, okay, I committed to nonviolence. I committed to stay in love. You know, let me, okay, fill my heart with love. I'll be fine. And, you know, so I get home. And I get home and I, you know, I'm busy. I'm already a little late. I'm busy. And I walk in the house and my cat just threw up on the carpet. Okay, not ideals, not really what I wanted to do, but I love my cat, you know, I'm still connected to this love, so I clean it up, and then I find out that I really need to take out the trash, and finally, I'm behind my computer to do my work. I open up my email, and I open up an email from a client who, in a very reasonable way, asks for a report, and I go like, ah, they're so demanding. You know, What has happened, right? Because I thought I was doing well. I thought that, you know, I was going back to love all along, but here, you know, something happens that wasn't really anything out of the ordinary, what I actually get paid to do, you know, and here I am upset. So what happens is, like, I really like this book, The Anatomy of Peace. It's like, if you take the class or not, I really recommend that you pick it up because it explains a lot the source of conflict. And what they say in Anatomy of Peace, it's like, it's not always so much what we do as our attitude behind it. And they talk about we can be we can act with a heart at peace, or we can act with a heart at war. And when we act with a heart at peace, we are in that place that John Lewis described. Our heart is full of love. We're open. You know, we're curious about the other person. We understand that they have a life. You know, we understand that they have experiences that touches them. You know, we don't really have our agenda going. But with a heart at war, we have our own agenda going. And then it's not about the other person. It becomes about us. It's just about me. You know, when you become an object to me, I'm not really concerned about your well-being. I might be concerned about your well-being if it serves me. But it's, you know, it's an interesting thing to think about because on the outside, it can look like, oh, yeah, this person is a really kind person, but you have this weird feeling in your body. You know, And it's like it's the motivation behind it. So when you become an object to me, you either can enhance my goals. You know, you can support me in my goals by your action. You can be an obstacle for my goals, for what I want to obtain. Or it doesn't matter because you don't really have influence on what I experience in life. But then I also don't care about you. So a good example is like, for example, you know, let's say I have a job in a company and I want to have a promotion. You know, I want to step in another role. And so I see person A and I go like, if person A really likes me, then I have a better chance to get that new job I want. Now, there's also person B who would also like that job. Now, person B becomes an obstacle for me. Because if that person succeeds, then I won't get that job. And then there's person C, and they really have nothing to do with all of this, so I don't even care what is going on for them. So if I have a piece of information, let's say person B, who is an obstacle to me, is doing a project, and I have a piece of information that can support them, you know, I'm not going to give it to them. Because if I give it to them, then they can succeed and, you know, they will block my goal of wanting to be in this position. But I might give it to person A because it's a juicy piece of information and I will look good. Right? So when this happens, it's like when I use the example, you know, I come home, I see the email and I have a reaction. I have a choice, right? I can check myself and go like, oh, wow, I thought I was doing good, but apparently I'm not because my reaction to this email, you know, doesn't make sense. And then I can do what I need to do to get myself to a heart at peace, you know, and I can dissolve it and you know, how I describe it, it's like, I mean, at least for me, it's like I don't particularly like to be at a, you know, at a heart at war, but most of us are there quite a bit. It's just what is, you know? It's not right or wrong, but it's recognizing that that's where we live a lot of the time. And that it takes practice, like John Lewis says, we need to practice to get out of that and to get to that place of unconditional love and trust that we will be provided for. That when we come from that place of unconditional love, we will be taken care of. We're not left out. You know, when we come from unconditional love, we don't have to suffer. Everybody will be taken care of. So if I recognize that, then I can work on getting back to my heart at peace. Then I can get back to that place of love, right? But what happens when I don't recognize it or I don't care? Because let's be real. You know, it's not always that we're unconscious about not being in a loving space. Sometimes we make conscious choices. I don't want to be bothered. It's too much work. This constant practice is so tiring. I feel really uncomfortable looking at what is going on for me because, boy, can it be uncomfortable. Right? So we make conscious choices at times to not go to that place of love. And then what do? We start justifying it. Justification starts. Oh, you know, this client, they always ask for reports at the last minute. You know, I start to weigh every word in the email. Well, that wasn't a very kind email. They're not very considerate of me. Don't they know that I am busy? So we start justifying it. But the interesting thing is, that is not where it stops. When we start justifying it over time, if I don't go back to that place of love, it gets to a point that I need to start making my client so bad because I'm constantly still in this space of a heart at war. So I constantly have to justify. So it starts to grow. And there's a term they use in the anatomy of peace, and it's called horribilizing. But I really love that word because it describes so well what we're doing. Can you imagine that somebody took a microscope and looked at all the mistakes you made in your life and then put a spotlight on it? No context, nothing, no compassion, just a spotlight on the mistake for all to see. Dear God, I certainly hope they don't do that for me. But when we start horribilizing, that's what we do. We put a spotlight on anything that we think might not be right. And it might not even be true. We're willing to make things up. Oh, I imagine, you know, they're so full of themselves that they think they're just so entitled to that report. I don't know. Who knows what went on for them at that time? And the interesting thing is it doesn't stop with us. When that starts to happen, it starts to appear in cultures. We start to horribilize groups of people. We start to make up things about them. We promote it. We made it visible to everybody. And don't underestimate that what is out there, that it doesn't influence us. You know, there's studies done of the influence the media has. And the people who promote it and put it out there often have done studies so they know exactly how to get it out. So we start horribilizing groups of people. We start not caring about people. People become objects because we don't want to be uncomfortable. Because we're justifying what we're doing and we don't want to move. We don't want to take the chance like John Lewis did. What would happen if we had a heart filled with love? What would happen if I look at my attacker and I look at him with love? We're scared. I'm right there with you. I'm not preaching at you. You know, it's scary. But where we can support the change is starting with ourselves and in our own life. And starting to look at which narrative we repeat. What do we do, you know, when we horribilize, when we make people wrong? Start, be curious. Where is this information coming from? Do I know that about this group of people? Do I even have knowledge about this group of people? Have I been in contact with them? Have I had conversations? Be aware when things are generalized. Nothing is true for all people. My Dutch friend is here, Ellen, thank you. And we have had conversations and we talk about the Dutch people. You know, and we talk about World War II. And it's like what I experienced, especially when I came to the States, that people who met me and learned that I was Dutch, that they said, it's like, oh yeah, the Dutch were so good to the Jewish people. And some of us were, and some of us were not. So even there, you cannot generalize. You know? Yes, the Dutch have good qualities, and the Dutch also have done some horrible things when you look at history. So, it's like be curious, be more specific, and be willing to be uncomfortable. And the only way you can do that is through practice. Just a little bit every day, make that commitment. Can we all be 100% in the space of love? I wished so. And I imagine we can grow it. You know, I think that's where the hope is for me. I have seen it in my own life. You know, I've been able to grow capacity to hold being uncomfortable. But it took practice, like John Lewis said. You know, so how do we practice it? First of all, it's like catching ourselves when we start step out of a heart of love. You know, and I really encourage you to learn the language of your body. Because what I notice is that my body gives me information that intellectually I often don't get for years. Start to listen to your body. It's interesting. I notice that when I get stressed out, I tend to tighten my lips just a little bit. You know, others might not see it, but I can feel it. And I go like, oh, something is going on for me. You know, or when I sit at my desk, I might hold my feet in a particular way. I put them on top of each other, but there's pressure. You know, so I put the tension there. Oh, let me relax my feet. You know, when I'm on the freeway and I'm driving, I grip the steering wheel just a little tighter. Not tight, because that's obvious. No, just a little tighter. Oh, let me breathe. And then it's like I can ask, it's like when I'm behind the two cars and I go like, okay, let me be good and practice nonviolence and be in my heart. What is my motivation? Do I want to look good? You know? Do I want to look good even to myself? I was like, look at me, what I just did. You know? Or am I genuinely seeing the divine spark in the other person? I was thinking about it. It's like, you know, when John Lewis said, it's like he was taught that the divine spark in the person and he needs to honor and respect that. I go like, that's not a loose comment. You know, we all learn here that the divine lives in every person. But he made a commitment. He got it in his bones. The divine is right there, and I need to honor it. With that, you also need to know the divine is right here. It's right in within yourself, and you need to honor it. And when we come from that place of power, we can move mountains, we can build bridges, we can come together. Practice is so important if we want to do this. Bruce Lee has, you know, I have a beautiful quote from Bruce Lee. He said, like, under duress, we don't rise to our expectations, we fall to our level of practice. Under duress, we don't rise to our expectations, we fall to our level of practice. So practice. So what do we do? You know, besides noticing what our bodies are saying to us, it's, you know, we do the practices we know. It's meditation, affirmation, prayer. You know, I need to do that every morning. If I don't do it, my day is not as good as when I do it. So, you know, if I don't feel great, if I don't do the practices, I feel worse. So the practices help me. And now I got an accountability partner and I literally text her like, okay, I've done it. But it helps me, you know, to stay on point. I learned that when I wake up, I need to dive into it right away. If I start to do other stuff, it's not happening. But that's me. So find your own way to really build the practices into your life, right? But besides that, you also need to start working with your body, because our beliefs, what we have learned, it's all sitting in our bodies. And unless we start moving it out, it's much harder to get to that heart of peace. We cannot just do it with our minds. We cannot just do it intellectually. So I would like you to try something. So just sit up straight, Make yourself comfortable. Close your eyes if you can and feel comfortable doing so. And just notice where your body is at. Just feel your back. Feel your front. The sides of your body. Feel your feet. Just notice. And then just think of a time you were in conflict. Don't take a big thing. Just take a little thing and just be there for 5 or 6 seconds. And now ask yourself, what would it feel like if I let in 2% more love? What would it feel like if I let in 2% more love? Just notice. And take a deep breath. You can open your eyes. I hear sighs. That is good. Did you feel a shift? Just that little shift. You know, we don't have to shift all the way because often we can't. We can shift 2%. And imagine just doing that maybe 3 times a day. What if I experienced just 2% more love? Right? And I want to offer one more exercise, and that is, you know, sometimes we're in situations and we're really triggered, you know, and we have to respond, we have to interact with the person. And, you know, for me, I know that I'm not in the right place. But I cannot get around it. I can't take the time to get myself to a better place. Think of a person who embodies that quality of love for you. It can be a well-known person like the Dalai Lama or John Lewis, Mahatma Gandhi. It can be your grandmother who loved you so much, or a friend who is there for you. And what you do when you're in that situation, you bring them in. I might not know how to handle this situation, but my grandmother does. So I let my grandmother handle this situation through me. Yeah? Great. So what I'm asking you to do as a community is practice staying in a heart at peace, practice staying in that love, making the commitment. Practice seeing the spark of the divine in the other person. Play with it. Be curious. What is that like when I see the spark of the divine in the other person and I treat it with dignity? Listen to the language of your body. Learn it. It's a beautiful language. And practice inviting 2% more love or the person, you know, to act on behalf of you. I'm not closing this talk with an affirmation today. I'm actually going to close it with a poem. Sacred poetry is very powerful because poetry bypasses the mind and falls straight on our hearts. And there's a beautiful poem by Hafiz. It's called I Know the Way You Can Get. And it describes what we just have been exploring this morning. So I want to recite that and let it fall on your heart and anchor it, what we have just explored. I know the way you can get when you have not had a drink of love. Your face hardens, your sweet muscles cramp. Children become concerned about a strange look that appears in your eyes, which even begins to worry your own mirror and nose. Squirrels and birds sense your sadness and call an important conference in a tall tree. They decide which secret code to chant to help your mind and soul. Even angels fear that brand of madness that arrays itself against the world and throws sharp stones and spears into the innocent and into oneself. Oh, I know the way you can get if you have not been drinking love. You might rip apart every sentence your friends and teachers say, looking for hidden clauses. You might weigh every word on a scale like a dead fish. You might pull out a ruler to measure from every angle in your darkness the beautiful dimensions of a heart you once trusted. I know the way you can get if you have not had a drink from love's hands. That is why all the great ones speak of the vital need to keep remembering God. So you will come to know and see him as being so playful and wanting, just wanting to help. That is why Hafiz says, "Bring your cup near me, for all I care about is quenching your thirst for freedom. All a sane man can ever care about is giving love." Take a deep breath. Okay. So in this light of love, I want to make an announcement. Our beloved Ben Cabal had a massive stroke about 4 weeks ago. And just 6 days ago, he took his last breath and left his body. What I've experienced when I interacted with Ben, and also what I've heard his close friends say, is his enormous generosity. His enormous generosity, but not only that, his dedication to be in the space of love. When I would have a conversation with him, it was always about, oh yeah, how can we get back to that love? How can we support others to be in that love? Which healing modalities can we bring to people so they can release what is not serving them and be in that love? And I know that not all of our relationships with Ben are the same. But for now, as a congregation, I'm asking of you to see the spark of the divine, the spark of God as Ben, and focus on that. And then I would like to go into prayer together. So let's pray. Knowing that there is only one divine consciousness. Only one divine consciousness that is of the form of love. One divine consciousness that has been so eager to express itself through each and every one and all that we see and we don't see. That the spark of the divine, therefore, is in each and every one, including Ben. And that it is in all of his friends and his family and all who have known him. And that it's also in the grief that is experienced and the exhilaration that is experienced for his freedom. So right now, I affirm that love that is present right here. That love that guides Ben on his journey, wherever he is right now, because he is not gone. And I affirm that love for all who have known him, that it holds them and soothes them and uplifts them. And I affirm that the love, that the spark of love of the divine that Ben was and all that he has given lives on in this community, in our hearts. And for this, I am just so grateful. And I let it be, and so it is. So take a deep breath, everybody. I mentioned in What to Do is that we have to be aware of our bodies. And we have a beautiful song coming up. And I know that Lisa will invite you to stand up. And I highly encourage you to do so. There has been a lot of words spoken. And I can feel there are a lot of feelings here. Move your body. Shake it off. Okay? Thank you.